What's up, everybody? Justin Soderberg back for another episode of the Maine State of Mind podcast. Welcome. This week, we chat with Joseph, or Joe Schmalke. He is a comic book creator, a storyteller who resides in Maine right now. He is a great artist, great storyteller, great writer. He's also the co-publisher for Scout Comics' imprint, The Black Caravan. He also is the creator of Murder Hobo, The Electric Black, Cherry Blackbird, among other titles. He also works on Phantom Starkiller, We Don't Kill Spiders. It goes on and on and on. He's releasing a new company called Tracker Toys to create little figurines and toys, which is coming out, also available through Scout Comics. This guy is just fun to talk with. He has a bunch going on. He's a very, very talented individual. You'll learn a lot about what he does, what he's got on his plate right now. So thank you guys for tuning in. This is episode 49 of the Maine State of Mind with Joseph Schmalke. Thanks a lot, everybody. Don't forget to follow us, subscribe to us, and everything on the internet, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, all the places. And you can visit us at themainstateofmind.com. And this is episode 49 with Joseph Schmalke. Enjoy, everybody. How's it going, Joe?
Good. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely, man. Glad you took some time out to join us on this beautiful Monday. This comes out in a couple weeks, but it's a Monday while we're recording it. So it's a beautiful Monday. It's snowing in Orrington, I'll tell you that much.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Tonight's a supermoon, so maybe that's what's going on.
My wife texted me and she goes, "It's snowing in Newport." I go, "What?" And I looked outside a second ago when I went into the kitchen and I was like, "Oh my gosh, it's snowing in Orrington." And it's what, April 26th? It's snowing in Maine. It's typical Maine weather, right?
I think people forget that, like, the winter doesn't actually leave Maine till the end of this month, you know? It always snows at least once or twice in April.
So. My day job is I work for Orono Brewing Company, and I believe it was last year's graduation weekend, quote unquote, because there wasn't actually a graduation weekend due to the pandemic. Right. But I believe we were all kind of happy it was, because it was snowing on graduation weekend in Orono. And that's like May 8th, May 9th, right around that time. So it's like one of those things. Can you imagine sitting in an outdoor graduation ceremony and snow?
And it's snowing. Yeah.
But a bunch of living up here talking weather. I feel like it's all we do in Maine is talk about the weather, honestly.
I'm not originally from the area. I'm a transplant, but I was born in Minnesota. Fantastically cruel winters up there. I was raised in Louisiana and Mississippi. So we have like some of the hottest summers. I've never lived in that's not true. I lived in North Carolina. The temperature there is amazing.
Yes, it's like, exactly.
It's pretty fantastic.
What brought you to Maine in the first place?
My wife is from New England. She grew up in Merrimack, New Hampshire. Mm-hmm. And I went to high school in Westford, Mass. Graduated from Westford Academy. And then I went to Massachusetts College of Art, Bridgewater State College. Dropped out of school for a couple of years, traveled the country, and then I graduated from UMass.
That's awesome. And that's cool. That's really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Moved to New York City. That's where I met my wife. We traveled out to California, where we lived for a couple of years before. She wanted to live closer to her family. She's very close with her parents and grandparents and stuff like that. So cousins. So we moved back here, and we wanted to be in an area that we could access her family, but also have a little space. And so we moved to Maine.
That's pretty crazy. I mean, I spent 10 years in Andover, Haverhill, Lowell, Massachusetts. I moved back to Maine about 6 years ago now. And I regulared Westford, Massachusetts a lot, because my ex-wife worked down in that area. So I was in Westford a lot in about 2014, 15 time, right around there. So I know Westford a little bit.
Yeah, there's another guy that lives in Topsom. He's one of our friends. His name's Ryan Wang. he actually lived in Westford like right after I left. So we always have like, we actually have crossover acquaintances and stuff that we used to hang out with. So
that's pretty cool. I mean, I said at my day job at Orner Brewing Company, I was talking to a customer the other day. We just recently opened back up, and he had all these, like, he lives in Massachusetts also, but like right around the same time I did, but I didn't know this guy from a hole in the wall, but it was just kind of funny. Cause I, like, every time he'd mention something, it was like reconnecting with an old friend that I didn't know this guy at all, but he kept on mentioning places in Massachusetts and you know, Southern New England. And I'm like, oh yeah, I know that place. It was just kind of funny to connect with some people in this kind of quote unquote small world of New England.
Honestly, the world's incredibly small. I've lived in California and New Orleans and New York City, and I always run into people that have been in other parts. I've been at airports before and run into friends of mine that I haven't seen in 5 years. You know what I mean? It is a small world.
It's crazy. And I always laugh at, especially in Maine, when someone goes, oh, you live in Maine, do you know so-and-so? And you're laughing in your head like, okay, Maine's bigger than people think it is. But then they say the name and you're like, oh, actually, I know that guy.
Right, like,
oh, okay. Yeah. Oops. But yeah, I mean, Maine is Maine's pretty cool. Maine's getting some pretty good rep here. I'm friends with Ben Bishop too, who also lives down in the Portland area, and he's getting some notoriety right now with his work too. So I mean, Maine's gotten some pretty good comic book people.
He actually, me and him used to share a studio last year. and then his studio is down the hall from here. We're in the same building.
Yeah, he posts enough pictures of his studio. He's a little, Instagram happy with his studio.
He's a very Instagrammable person. Yes.
I think there's more pictures of his studio than there are his actual artwork on his Instagram right now, which is cool. Nothing against Ben. We all love Ben, but it is kind of funny. He's pretty proud of that studio for sure.
It's nicer than his apartment, I'll tell you that.
And that's why I think he's probably there a lot.
Yeah, I think so too.
But yeah, I had some studio space for myself, and then I'm expecting a child in June, and so I shifted my studio to my bedroom so I could have a nursery for my child. It's all good. I got some space to work right here. That's all I really need. No one
is
else
this your first kid?
Yes, this is my first kid. Yes.
Enjoy the sleep while you still can. It's funny, like you're gonna lose sleep and you're gonna wonder how you're gonna be able to function, but you do. You just adapt to it. Yeah. But yeah, I have two kids.
That's awesome. So. I'm excited. We're excited. It's a boy. It was funny because I'm a big comic book fan. I've been a comic book fan since I was a young kid, and we were talking about names and batting names around and so on. And we were like, if it's gonna be a girl, we're like, let's go with Nova. We really like Nova. And then we found out it was a boy, and I was like, I still think we like Nova. I think Nova works for a guy's name too. We're pretty happy about that. So we stuck with Nova. And then it was like two weeks later where I'm like, it didn't even connect the dots. I was like, wait, there's a Marvel character named Nova. Like, I've known that for years. I own comic books with his face on it, and it just came funny. So then it came this whole like me full force into buying like random Nova comic books to have in my collection. Jay Cochran from the Bangor Comic Con, he's my a tattoo artist, so I had him tattoo, it's hard to see on here, Nova on
the
my
Nova
arm
Corp
and all.
On there.
So it was just kind of funny how quick the Nova thing. I was like, oh my gosh, and people like, friends are gonna go, you named him after the comic book character, and I'm like, no, I promise, I didn't even connect the dots.
But now you're all in. Mm-hmm. You know.
And I'll be the smart parent. I'll collect some of these comic books, and when he gets old enough, I'll hold on to them and give them to as gifts, like I just bought them for him. I don't know. Jay is a good guy. Jay's a great guy. I love
him. He's going to rebel against you and name himself Kevin or something.
Yeah, exactly. He's going to go by his middle name. His middle name is going to be Michael. He's going to go by Mike. I guarantee
it's like, don't call me Nova. My name's Michael. That's the name my parents gave me.
They have the comic book cover. It says the man that used to be called Nova instead of the man called Nova. The man called Michael. I'm like, oh, God damn you. But let's get into talking some of the comic book stuff that you do. So you went to college art. Do you call yourself an illustrator? Or are you more, what are you just comic book creator? What do you call yourself?
Yeah,
what would you describe yourself?
I've been calling myself a storyteller, which has led to people ragging on me and stuff. My good friends like to jab me about that every once in a while, but that is what I do. I'm a visual artist and I'm also a writer, and I can, you know, double threat. So I make most of the projects that I work on, I'm involved with both aspects of it, with the exception of one book. So yeah,
that's pretty cool. I know I have some right here. I'm new to, I mentioned I like comic books. I've liked comic books for years. I've been a diehard Marvel fan for many, many years. And then it went into trying to get some more indie stuff over more recently, trying to expand my horizons a little bit. And I got my first Murder Hobo comic book from Jay and Will.
That's the one book where I am pretty much just the writer on. Yeah.
And I got this is the variant cover of it, but yeah.
Yeah, that's the one that Steve Levine did the cover for. So my partner on that book, Jason Lynch, he does most of the illustration for the first two one-shots that we put out, which are called Broken, Beaten, and Buggered, which is what you have there. Yep. And then the other one is called All In at the Dragon Shaft. No one's actually said anything about it, but Ryan G. Brown, the new main artist on Chaotic Neutral, which is the current run of the book, he actually does three pages inside All In at the Dragon Shaft, but Jason's coloring it is so rich that it just sort of blends Ryan's art into Jason's, and so I don't think people really notice.
They're all great, and it's definitely. I mean, where did this come from? We were on the subject of Murder Hobo. How did that get started?
I got really baked and drunk with my buddies, and I had, you know, I've played role playing games for years, and I started hearing about murder hobos, right? That it was this sort of fun assassin that would come in to any RGB and take over and kill non-player characters that weren't supposed to be killed, and take items of loot that didn't belong to them, and just basically ruin the dungeon master's like laid out plans. And I was like, that's pretty awesome. So I did a deeper dive into it, started reading rules and stuff about how this character was being sort of designated by the average Dungeons and Dragons player. And then I was like, wouldn't it be cool if there was just like a whole story behind these things? The initial concepts behind it were pretty wacky, because I went to first off, I don't draw in a very cartoony style. My style is more like the stuff that's behind me right now on this virtual screen. But I don't draw in a very cartoony way. And I knew that, like, for the jokes and for the humor of this particular book to work, it needed to look like something like Rick and Morty or something, you know? And so my buddy Jason had just moved back to Maine. He's from here. And we were partying one night, and I pitched him on the concept. So he started, like, sort of throwing back character sketches at me for what he thought they might look like. And the first couple were just like so far off the mark. But then eventually I think I looked at him one night and I was like, you're a murder hobo yourself. Cause he is, he's a lunatic. And so I was like, draw yourself and make yourself into the murder hobo. So Roddy, the rotten, the sort of like the Mickey Mouse character of the comic, he's this dude in the front, this guy, is Jason. And then we sort of developed out some other archetypes that sort of fell into this murder hobo category. So there's a hypersexualized murder hobo called Spectre Liaison, who's also addicted to pixie dust, which is, you know, the Land of High Adventure's version of cocaine.
Yeah.
And then there's Big Mama Venus. She's like a half demon who's a pyromaniac. And then there's Blarn and Burgle, and they work together. And Burgle's like a little invisible fish man, and Blarn is this big shit-throwing orc. And then the last character is Lord Froth, and he first appears in Chaotic Neutral. And he's a frothmancer. He's a necromancer, but he's also a frothmancer. And he can control all froth. So, yeah, I mean, it's fun. At its base, when we're doing this book, it's everybody that works on it is having a good time for the most part, except for I'm like usually yelling at people to finish up their job. But yeah, it's a beautiful looking comic book. It's one of the few books that I work on where I'm not actively involved in a majority of the artwork. But it's in the very capable hands of Jason, who is just a great colorist and a great collaborator on this. The team that I have for Chaotic Neutral, Jason, he still does some of the art. He does, like, we do fake ads in the book. Mm-hmm. So he's still doing those in, like, issue one. He does the ad goblins and stuff like that. And he colors most of the book, and he letters everything. But Ryan G. Brown, who did the cover here, he's the new lead artist this year. Part of that is Jason has a day job, and, like, it's hard for him to meet these deadlines that get set out for us. And then we got Steve Levine from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle fame. He's come on board. He's going to be doing one story with us every issue. And then Jarrett Melendez, who's a very good friend of mine. He's been a writer. Me and him started out at the same time in comics. And so I've known him for years. He used to work at Coast City Comics in Portland. That's where we met. He's got like a wicked sense of humor. Me and him have had some awesome cons together where we've gotten drunk and done stupid stuff and like told great jokes. And so I knew he was somebody I wanted to collaborate with on the writing aspects of this. And he's going to be writing at least one story, if not more, every issue. So yeah, that's the new team. And we do have, you know, open slots for people to jump in and stuff. So in issue one here, we had Steve Mardo, who this is like, I think this is his first big published thing. He came in and did the Big Mama Venus story in this. And then, but next issue, Jason's coming back and he's doing a story as well. Mardo has gone on to work on a book that we just are signing right now called Epic Tavern. I can talk to you more about that later.
So with Murder Hobo, I know you did that one shot. Is it now Chaotic Neutral? Is it now moving forward to an issue two and so on? Now that's the series.
Yep. Issue two is soliciting right now. Okay. There's a great cover for it done by Ryan G. Brown. Mm-hmm. You ever heard of the movie Society?
It sounds familiar, but I'm not gonna be able to. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a horror film. And there's this really disturbing scene called The Shunting. And I wanted to like recreate that in some way. So I was thinking about gelatinous cubes and how they would like absorb people. Mm-hmm. And so there is a scene like that in the issue two coming up, and we call it a goo cube because, you know, we don't want to get sued by TSR or anything like that.
Yeah.
So it's going to continue to be like fun and crazy. And we had a pretty good review on CBR yesterday. Somebody had posted a, review of issue one of Chaotic Neutral, and people are liking it. You know, it's got a fan base, and people are genuinely enjoying it. I wouldn't say it's as intelligent as something like Rick and Morty, but it's a fun book that embraces the role-playing culture and makes fun of it at the same time. So people that are into that kind of thing, if you want to check it out, you'll love it, because, you know, it's about you guys, but at the same time, it likes to poke at you guys and girls.
Do you think, I mean, is it something like for people who are fans of Rick and Morty, like they will be a fan of this? Is that something that, not that you said they're on equal playing field, just saying it does have that esque. If you were to look at this in the thing and you didn't know a difference between the two, you might associate that they are connected in a way, which is pretty cool. Cause I mean, obviously Rick and Morty is not, you know,
yeah, Rick and Morty is more sci-fi and stuff. Yeah, exactly. This one is clearly, you know, it's the land of high adventure is like a sword and sorcery kind of story. So if you're into that, maybe give us a try, you know?
And so, yeah, I think it, I mean, according to previews world, and obviously things change, and obviously with your schedule and stuff like that, looks like this summer issue two will be out, and you said soliciting now, so.
Yeah, in July. It'll be out in July. Cool.
I mean, deadlines are deadlines, right? If you can make it.
Yeah, Yep, Jason's actually sitting back there right now doing pages for it.
There you go, exactly. So the only other, I will be honest, the only other comic book I have from you is the one that I got sent last quarter, or this past quarter, from Ben's Bishart Kids Club, which is his, the variant of
Phantom Starkiller. Yeah.
So I was pretty excited for that one.
I had touched base with Peter Gorrell, who's the creator of that. We've been friends for years. I had done, so Phantom Starkiller is like a story deconstructed, where it started as an action figure that Peter made back in 2012 for San Diego Comic-Con. And he's part of a movement of these bootleg toy makers. So there's a lot of them. All you got to do is go on Instagram, type in hashtag bootleg toys, and you're going to see a bunch of stuff. There's some really cool guys like Sucklord and Dollar Size Bootlegs and Healy Made, and Peter's part of that group, and his handle is Killer Bootlegs. So he was one of the first bootleg guys to like basically get a legit sort of following with his toy by getting picked up by Super 7, and they made a reaction figure of the Phantom Starkiller. And so this was like a New York Comic Con exclusive. It sold out. It did really well. And they've made several colorways of that figure since then. And I did the rarest version of it and also the most printed version of it. So I did the glow-in-the-dark Starkiller figure. You're lucky if you can find one at this point. But so that was the second colorway that came out. And actually, we pay homage to it. Inside issue one of Phantom Starkiller, he gets like juiced up with power, and he turns into his into his glow colorway. So
yeah,
that was the first one I did for Super 7, and then about a year later Peter hit me up again, and I did a black and gray version of this cover.
Okay.
And that became the Blackout Banshee edition, and he's a black and gray Starkiller. So that was, I think that was the most produced figure that they ever had for Phantom Starkiller as well. It has sort of like Japanese writing on the top that says Starkiller. So yeah, that book, after I had done the Blackout Banshee card art for Peter, James Hake, the president at Scout, one of my best friends, he was pitching me on the idea of starting up imprints through Scout. And we work independently, yet, you know, Scout's sort of like the umbrella that we're under. And so it was me and Richard Rivera from Stabity Bunny were given the first two imprints. And, you know, he wanted me to work with Rich Woodall, who's my partner on the Electric Black. Me and Rich put this book out a couple of years back. The first appearance of it was actually the first appearance of it came out at New York Comic Con when Starkiller came out. Anyway, when we put that out, it was the top selling Scout book of all time. Right. So they clearly knew we knew what we were doing. We knew how to use crowdsourcing, and we were, a lot of the creators at Scout, they self-promote, right? Scout's not, we don't have like a marketing department there. So there is a lot of self-promotion going on, and we were just really good at it. So they gave us our own imprint. And one of the first things that I signed that I wanted to sign was Phantom Starkiller. So I reached out to Peter because we had talked several times about the fact that his character has a story. And so we started talking about the story. We flushed out a lot of the details on it. And then eventually that became the comic book that, you know, you got in the mail. And it had a crazy following behind it. It had like 32 or 33 covers or something altogether. So...
It seems like the new move is to have that many covers for a new thing anyway, but
I think part of it is the pandemic, right? Yep. So the pandemic hit and these conventions aren't around anymore. So people don't have access to the artists. And this is a way for you to collect more artwork from your favorite artists. And I think people were getting some of those stimulus checks and they were feeling flush. I don't know. I can only guess. I would love it if this trend continued for us, but I have a feeling that now that people are starting to get vaccinated, and doors are opening and conventions are starting again, that the variant cover thing might die down, but I'm not 100% because I didn't see it happening when it was happening. Yeah. And now that it's there, I don't know how it's going to go away, but hopefully not too soon.
And some of it makes sense. There are certain ones like this, with you being in the same, basically the same building as Ben, and you guys are friends, and that aspect of it's kind of cool, give him an opportunity to do a cover. Obviously, you know, some of these artists that help out too obviously have a pretty tight schedule as well. But like, I can also see, like, you know, you did this one for a con, so it's still a con, and it's obviously con. This, their con never happened yet. At least this has been delayed a couple of times. But every time, there's a couple issues for sale at Galactic Comics in Bangor. Of this cover, and I keep on going in there and seeing it. Always reminds me of the con that never happens, because it says Comic and Toy Con April 24th to the 26th of 2020. So we're coming up on actually today would have been the last day of a year ago, the last day of that con that never happened.
It was that was the first show that got maybe it was the second one. I think last year it was I was signed up to do Bangor and Little Giant, and they fell on the same weekend. I think I was going to have to go to Bangor one day, Little Giant the next day, and then back to Bangor. I can't remember how that was going to work, but the pandemic hit, and unfortunately they had to shut down for a bit. But I am intending, my intention is to be at Bangor in October. Mm-hmm. So,
which is, and that's like just trying to get back to some normalcy. But I mean, I think that the variant covers make sense for you, like people being at home and wanting these different things, like different covers and, you know, artwork from their favorite artists. Well, I think some of it will continue with like some shops maybe doing that more. You did see that even currently. I mean, there's times where I look online and I'm like, I can't believe, where's this variant come from? It's some random comic book store in Colorado or something like that.
Have digital stores now too, so yeah, it's been expanding, you know, the whole variant market. So I have a couple of books coming out in July that have multiple variants for them already, so I like it.
I like it too, but I've also learned as a collector, you have to also, if you know, unless you're flush with cash, to pick and choose the ones that you do want. I guess one of the benefits to me is, you know, as a person who likes to collect, you might get the stock, you know, cover A, and that could be your reader copy, and you read the comic book in that one, and your variant's the one that you put in a bag and a board and you don't touch. So you have a collector option too. There's a benefit of that as well. But I fell into it with a number of things, trying to collect all the covers, and it became pointless. I'm like, okay, pick a few that you like, collect those, and then move on to the next next comic book.
I've never worked on anything quite like, I think it was Crossover and Ronin, Last Ronin number one, and Crossover number one. They had like, Last Ronin had like 70 some odd covers, and then Crossover had 100. So you get kind of buried in the shuffle there, which is nuts. Starkiller is a little bit more, even though it was big for us, people could, you know, grab every variant out there, because they were all kind of staggered too. It wasn't like there was a huge dump all at once of all the covers. It was one week it was this guy, another week it was this, you know, this one was selling it in her shop. And so it went like that back and forth for all the way up until recently, where I think we're doing one more variant of it. The rumor has it that it's Jay Lee's doing a connect and cover between Starkiller one and Draco Knuckleduster one. So that should be a pretty cool one.
See, and those ones are the cool ones too. Like things like that make sense to me too. The kind of like connections in that aspect of it too, or you know, the homage covers too are pretty cool to me. Whereas like, you know, I'm a Walking Dead fan. They do some Walking Dead ones that were, you know, McFarlane did it look, making it look like Spawn and so on. Those are cool too. I mean, I didn't even know you mentioned the crossover one. I started collecting crossover and Red Issue One. And it was like a month later where I was just on Facebook scrolling through and I didn't even know Ben had a cover for crossover. You too. And I was
me and Ben both put our covers out through the same shop. He did like three variants. So it was me, Ben, and this guy, Scott McFarland. And me, Ben, and Scott have also done variants for that shop for Phantom Starkiller.
Yeah.
Along with Jason, the artist on Murder Hobo, and Ryan G. Brown, the other artist on Murder Hobo. So, yeah, we got our little clique of guys that and girls that we hang out with and produce art with as friends. My partner Rich has a pretty good philosophy on it. He's like, if one of us is doing well, all of us are doing well, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. That's his attitude. I think it's working. You know, we are all kind of bringing each other up. So
it doesn't hurt same thing.
That we're all like talented. You know, it's not like one of these guys we're trying to hold the hand of, and the other guy's failing. Yeah,
there's four guys that are great, and there's one guy that kind of mediocre. You have to hold up.
Yeah, we're not really having to do that with it. Every once in a while, you end up, you know, next to somebody that you're like, but you try and be. Not everybody's going to stay at that level. Sometimes people rise up too. So.
And I feel the same thing in the brewing industry. Like I mentioned before, I worked for a brewing company, and our world is a collaborative world too. And we feel, I think that motto, that saying of, if it's one of us is doing well, then all of us are doing well, is exact kind of the same thing in the brewing industry. If one brewery in my area is doing well, it's just going to increase visitors to the area, to your place. Because people like
beer, man.
Yeah. I mean, and people, like I said, people very rarely read one specific title of a comic book. It's like they read comics in general. And if you give them a book in front of them that either has cool artwork, has a cool story to it, or cool name to it, they might gravitate towards that. And that's where I came mentioning moving over to some more indie titles. I have more of a variety of comic book publishers now in my collection than I've ever had. And some of it has to do with the variant covers. Some of it has the possibility of me buying a title because I'd like the artwork on the cover. This sometimes I've never even opened the book just because I like the artwork on the cover. So it's pretty cool that the variant covers can actually also broaden that, and that people might know you as an artist and want to buy your variant cover, but didn't want to buy crossover in the first place. So they bought your variant, and then maybe they're now connected to crossover and have bought all the covers.
Yeah.
All of them.
Yeah, exactly.
If you buy all of them, that's, you have some money.
This is true.
On your covers. You have more room. I mentioned that there was at the comic book store the other day, and someone's like, oh, I got to stop collecting Pokemon cards. I don't have any more room. And I'm like, do you collect comic books? They go, no. I go, then don't talk to me. Talk about no have room for for Pokemon cards. Comic book is way bigger than a Pokemon card.
Pokemon card, yeah.
I'm like, where do you have storage? I don't have storage for cards anymore. I'm like, they're like 1/10 the size. Like, come on, man. Collect comic books and tell me you don't have space for it anymore. But yeah, so that it's, you know, I guess, and you were at that place in that building. It's pretty cool. You have a number of artists that are in that building too. So you guys probably worked in your covers.
Yeah. The guy that, a guy that works down the hall here, he's Wing Club Press. He did the ash cans for both Murder Hobo and Horror of Babylon, which is my upcoming book, Cherry Blackbird. I don't know if you've seen that anywhere. Yep. That's a new title that comes out next month. It's one of the, now it is the top selling direct market title for Scout. All the issues come polybagged because it's super adult. This is the graphic novel of it, which was actually made first. So that's a 5-issue series that starts in June. And then, but anyway, the guy who made the ash cans are like preview books. Mm-hmm. So the guy who made the ash cans for that and Murder Hobo, he's down the hall here this way. He's a Risograph graphic designer. Then you got Ben, who is downstairs. On this floor, I think it's mostly photographers. Mm-hmm. There's a couple of photography studios, and I think like a homemade clothing store is down here too. But yeah, that's all I know of as far as artists go. There's like also Jazzercise. in this building.
There you go, right? But yeah, it's cool. It's like a little hub. It's like a little collection of people, and they've done well, obviously, in the spot of getting people like you guys to rent studio space. Because it is kind of cool. Even photographers, artists in general, all in being one area. It's kind of cool. Almost like the worlds collide and the worlds align to the point where you all get all your creative freedom in one little spot.
Yeah. Yeah. And we are thinking about doing something here over the summer when more people are getting vaccinated and whatnot, that me and Ben will host something where you can go into both of our spaces, or we're going to try and there's an empty space below us that we might try and rent out for a weekend and like have people come in and do like a little pop-up sort of meet and greet thing.
But that's pretty badass. Yeah. So you got Phantom Starkiller. We talked about that. You've got, we've talked about Murder Hobo. I've seen you do We Don't Kill Spiders, the Electric
Black.
Yeah,
so we talked about. Electric Black is the like one of the flagship books for Black Caravan. And that's, so I'm a co-publisher of Black Caravan, right? And we have a lot of titles. We've got, last year we put out Perhaponauts, which was a book that was originally released by, I think it was Dark Horse first. Then it moved over to Image, and now it's with us. So we're re-releasing material that was released back in like 2009, I believe. And they're updating content inside the books. So every one of these books is going to have additional newer stuff. So fans of the Perhaponauts from back in the day can come in, jump on the book, and get something new. That's by Craig Russo and Todd DeZago. We're doing Phantom Starkiller, which isn't an ongoing series yet. It's going to be a collection of issue ones. So the first one is Phantom Starkiller. The one that's coming out in July is called Count Draco Knuckle Duster. Next year, we'll be putting out Vice Admiral Acker and Supreme Ruler Thubium. That will be the four issues that come together and make the opening chapter to the Phantom Starkiller universe. So got those. We Don't Kill Spiders is my new series. It's about a necromantic witch and a faithless Viking warrior teaming up to solve a series of murders in a Viking hamlet in the early Viking age. It deals with questions of faithlessness and loneliness and redemption and stuff like that. So it's a little bit deeper than, say, Murder Hobo. Then we've also got Providence of Madness, which is a Cthulhu-based horror graphic novel done by a team consisting of Simon Goh, Christian Dabari, and Kieran Tegan. And we also have The Shepherd being done. That was a book that originally came out through Caliber. It's similar to Perhaponauts, where it had some fan base. It's moved to us. It's being re-released with new material. And that is a very dark book about a man whose son overdoses, and he commits suicide to go into the afterlife and guide his son's spirit. And then we have that we just put out Black Friday, which is a fun three-issue series about like a Walmart superstore overrun with demons. I feel like I'm missing something here. We've got coming up Tales Told in Techno Horror, which is a horror anthology series. Same team that's working on Providence of Madness is doing that. And then I'm fairly certain I'm leaving something out. But that's part of this is I'm not just putting out my own books.
Yep.
I'm the co-publisher of Black Caravan, and these are some of our titles. Our line is horror, sci-fi, and the bizarre. So we're not putting out necessarily your traditional flavor of comic books. That being said, it doesn't mean that at some point we won't put out a superhero book, as long as it falls within sort of our guidelines. But it's just not in the cards yet. So, We Don't Kill Spiders comes in July. Count Draco Knuckle Duster comes in July. And so does a new book called Gods of Brutality, which is Rich Woodall's. He's writing it, and Mark Welzer is illustrating it.
And so, but Murder Hobo is just out on Scout Comic Books, but it's not part of the Black
Caravan. That's the only one that's not part of Black Caravan that I currently have. We moved Electric Black from Scout proper to Black Caravan.
Okay. Do you like to, would you rather do the entire process of creating a comic book or draw it or write it? What would you rather do if you had a choice? Gun to your head.
So right now I've been doing We Don't Kill Spiders, and I am the writer and the illustrator on that. And I do all the coloring and stuff like that. The only thing I don't do, because I hate doing it, is lettering. So I've hired a letterer, and you always, as a creator, you need an editor. And I trust Sean French. He is the writer on Escape from Jesus Island. He's currently one of the head writers at Epic Tavern at Hyperkinetic Studios. Really smart guy. He's somebody I trust. It's hard to find a good editor, you know. We do have another editor. That's Andrea Molinari. He's the creator of Shepherd. Also another good guy, but you need a good editor if you're going to work on your own, because you need that other set of eyes. You need another bit of perspective to look at what you're doing and make sure that you're staying on track. Somebody to keep you honest.
Yes, so, exactly.
With Cherry Blackbird, that again was all me. You know, I wrote it. I drew it. Me and, a couple of years ago, when me and Ben were studioing together, we're very DIY guys. We want to do everything on our own. And with Cherry Blackbird, the original graphic novel, I literally did everything on my own. I even lettered the thing. So, it was just that's where I discovered I don't want to letter anymore. But other than that, I like having complete control. I do. With Murder Hobo, it's a lot of the control is out of my hands. It's more like I look at something and I'm like, thumbs up or thumbs down or just fix that kind of thing. But I want as little involvement with the artistic process on this book as possible. And that follows more into Jason's lap, making those kind of decisions on that particular book. With Electric Black, it's a collaboration. Both me and Rich are the artists and the writers on it. So we take turns drawing pages. I will say this, he has a tendency to like get his way about which pages he wants to do, and they're always the action filled pages. And mine are the ones where like people are just sitting around talking. So and that's where his real passion is. He loves drawing like lots of heavy action and stuff. So I've just been like, maybe you keep writing and then don't draw this book, because you clearly hate drawing it sometimes. But
I can see where you're coming with the complete creative control, though, because I'm a graphic designer and I do all the design labels for our brewery. And there's times where I create the title of the beer, the color scheme, what I want to do on the can label and everything. And then there's times that they like hand me this package of things and go, now you need to fit this into your creative bubble. And I tell you, like the complete creative control thing is way easier, because you can go where you want to go and draw how you do what you want to do. When there's one thing, if they create the title, then you have to try to create the artwork that goes with the title. It's a lot more difficult to get your creative juices flowing, for sure.
Yeah,
for sure.
But yeah, trying to think if there's anything else coming up. This year is basically like me and Rich still getting our feet wet with being publishers on Black Caravan. We have some cool events coming up later in the year, and we're going to make some really awesome exclusives that you'll only be able to get through our label. So not available in stores or anything like that. Just something cool for fans that doesn't completely destroy your pocketbook, but will give you like a reason to drop a little bit of cash. In July, we're doing a San Diego type event, but it's going to be right here at our studio. We're doing three exclusives for our three number ones coming out, as well as bundling those with the three ash cans showcasing the new titles we're launching in October. And there's going to be a couple other odds and ends in there, like stickers and mini prints and stuff that you'll only be able to get through this box.
That's pretty awesome.
And one surprise book. Yeah.
Ooh, there you go. Do people come to you with books like as a co-publisher, or are you seeking out people? How does I'm not doing this because I have a book or anything like that, but just wondering how that works. I know you said it was a lot of those people you probably are acquaintances with that now are published by Black Caravan, but like, would someone come to you with a book and be like, I'm looking for a publisher?
So how it started with us initially was we had an open site. You know, you could go and submit a book there. We got inundated with a lot of, you know, stuff. We ended up, you know, it's just me and Rich that run this company. So quickly we found the couple that we wanted, we signed them, and then we shut down our application, you know, our submission policy. We haven't reopened it yet. But people somehow get information to us. I'm not going to talk about it here because I don't want to get bombarded with stuff again.
Yeah.
But we actively look for people. So a couple of the titles we've signed is us finding that person and getting their title. A couple of the things have been things that have crossed our desk, and how that process usually works is Rich is, the sort of the buck stops with him when it comes to artwork. So if it never makes the Rich test, it doesn't make its way to my desk. So he's actually looked at quite a bit more stuff than I have, but if I don't see it, it's because Rich didn't like it. So, and then when I look at it, it's, is the story good? You know, so I read it, and if the story is good at that point, we move on it. We don't have a ton of titles. It's just two guys, and our opinions don't reflect like whether or not you're good or you're bad or anything. It's just, these are our tastes, you know? And I try to tell people that too, that have submitted to us and we've, you know, passed on their project. It's not that it sucks. It's just our opinion. Go find another home for it. Plus, there's a giant world out there for the self-starter, the self-creator, which is what me and Rich were for years. You know, we utilized Kickstarter to make a couple of our books because no publisher wanted us. And that's fine. That's the way of it. What's funny to me is like Cherry Blackbird, for instance, right? If I didn't have Black Caravan, this thing would not be getting published like in the way that it's being published now. And to see it become not only a successful book for Scout, but one of the most successful books is kind of funny to me. So, yeah, I don't know why that's happening. But if we reject you or something like that, you're not bad. And we're probably missing the boat on your awesome project. I know that sucks, but there's only two of us and we can only put out so much.
And there is that world we have. And I had this discussion. My dad used to play in musician in bands years ago. And he always makes fun of the fact that like when we were younger, we were able to just like record an album like in our basement quickly and throw it up on the internet and it's available. Whereas my dad had to spend thousands of dollars to get put on a cassette tape and all the other stuff. Whereas like there is this ability for artists and comic book creators and book creators to have the usefulness of the internet and Kickstarter to just put their project out there and hopefully gets picked up and you can sell it and you can create and you can own all the rights to it, which is pretty cool. So there is an option for people who don't have someone to publish their book for them.
It's true. It's true. And like Kickstarter didn't exist when I first started. So it really helped me a lot. And I'll say this to you. If the thing holding you back is like, oh, well, I really need a publisher, then you need to get out of this because it's really about your drive, how much you're willing to put into it. So, you know, 90% of the time, the reason things aren't getting made, it's because the person just doesn't have the motivation to do it. So,
and say yes, it's always that there's a bunch of talented people out there who don't have motivation, and that's why things aren't getting created by those people. It's not just that they don't have the talent; it's because they don't have the motivation. You're right about that.
Yeah, hustle's important, man. Very important. Yeah, I have like an intern starting at the end of next month, and one of the things that I'm going to be doing is taking on an intern from Maine College of Art every semester. And the intention is to not just use this person as like grunt labor or something to be my packing person, but I'm going to be teaching them the skills that you need in order to self-publish your own book. Hopefully by the time they're done with their semester with me, they'll be getting their 3 college credits and know how to put together their own comic book. And hopefully I can help them get it either A, crowdsourced, or if it's really good, get it published.
That's pretty awesome. You know, it's cool. Like I said, with, again, goes leads back to that whole, you guys all being in that same building and being close to places like Maine College of Art, that you have that ability to bring that in. If you were in some, you know, western town of Maine, somewhere in the middle of nowhere, it'd be a little bit more difficult to find someone who would be an internship for you.
I don't think this kind of internship has existed outside of Savannah College of Art or the Kirby School in Dover. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to start something here with Black Caravan. And Rich is doing a similar program with Black Caravan in New Hampshire, where he's working with kids from Montserrat. So I'm using Maine College of Art. He's using Montserrat. We're hoping to create these new relationships with these schools in order to really get people to break into the comic book industry.
It's crazy. Well, you can make a living making comic books. I thought that was a...
It's hard, but yeah, I'm making a living at it.
It's just one of those funny old stories about people who didn't want to tell people they were comic book artists or comic book art writers, because it was this trashy thing that people threw away. And now it's a multi-billion dollar industry, which is pretty cool.
Well, if you're one of the guys that owns the IP, yeah, it's very profitable. Mm-hmm. And that's the important thing that, you know, I tell people when I work with them is like, never give up your IP. And one of the great things about Black Caravan and Scout in general is that it's a creator-run, creator-owned industry. So you can always run off with your stuff, you know?
Which is what, I mean, you work hard on it. It's nice to have that option to be able to do that and keep your own, you know, projects to yourself if you decide to leave and do it on your own. So that's pretty cool. But you're on... You can you have your own website, right?
Yeah, my website's dog crap though. Right? Like, does anybody even go to websites anymore?
Yeah, I went to it to look for what you had stuff on it, but I mean, yeah, I kind of go to your website to click on your social media platform.
Yeah, I mean, I had my web guy sort of like update it recently, but I noticed he didn't even put in any of the new images, so I was just like, all right, I guess he's not going to do that, but. Yeah, the easiest way to see my upcoming stuff and my newest stuff is either Joseph Schmalke Storyteller on Facebook. My Instagram account is @Schmalke. Pretty easy to find me there. And usually everything on Instagram does end up on Twitter for some reason, because I think there's a little button I push that like sends it off to Twitter.
Same both places, yeah.
Yeah, and that, I'm Joseph Schmalke on Twitter.
So that's pretty cool. And you can find all that stuff. And obviously Scout Comics. And if you go to scoutcomics.com, you can find everything for Black Caravan, I believe, as well on there. I didn't check, but does Black Caravan have his own website or is it just?
It does. It's called theblackcaravan.com. I have not looked at that site, though, in a while. Rich is in charge of that. So if it looks like crap, you can blame Rich.
I blame Rich. it doesn't look like it's going anywhere. No, it's my computer's being slow. But yeah, Scout Comics obviously has everything as well. I looked at that the other day. You can buy things on there. I bought a couple of digital. I think I bought the digital copies of Murder Hobo because I could read it on my iPad.
We also have a couple other ventures coming up real soon. I'll make it quick. We have Tracker Toys, which I'm the chief creator officer at Tracker, and that's me and Killer Bootlegs, Peter Gorel. He's the CEO. James Hake at Scout, the president of Scout, is the president of Tracker. And we have Don Hanfield, who's the CFO. So one of the first things we're putting out are Murder Hobo miniatures. This is a 3-inch version of the 32mm version that's going to be coming out. And this is Lord Froth. So we've had a very talented sculptor. His name's Willie Cow. He's been sculpting these for us for a couple months now. The first batch of these is coming in from China, I believe by June. And it's going to feature both Roddy the Rotten, this guy here, and Spectra Liaison. And they're going to come with playing cards that have like rules that you can incorporate into your Warhammer game or your Dungeons and Dragons game. And it's how you'd use these characters. And you know, they're legit miniatures. They're like this big. They come in really cool colorways. She's gonna be like a bluish purple, mm-hmm. and he's gonna be like a piss yellow amber kind of color. So that's the first batch of those. We have a Playmate style Roddy the Rotten also coming out later in the year, and he'll stand. You could literally put him next to any of your turtle toys, your Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle toys, because it's being sculpted by the original sculptor from that. So he's making a version of Phantom Starkiller, Count Draco Knuckleduster, and Roddy the Rotten in that style. And then we also have available now, there's like a plush bunny rabbit of Stabbity Bunny, Richard Rivera's creation. So those are our first toys that we've rolled out with. And we're also making 375 figures. You know, like this size figures. We're doing a newer version of Starkiller. Mm-hmm. We've got a Julius Black figure that's coming out, Metal Shark Bro, one of the women from White Ash, and Gut Ghost. So it's a cool line of toys that we're putting out too. And I believe we're going to be crowdsourcing that somewhere in the middle of the summer.
I do know you can get the, I believe the Stabbity Bunny is available on Scout Comics under the Tracker toys. The Tracker logo is awesome too. It's like a vintage,
yeah,
almost
Peter
vintage
designed
looking.
That. It's really cool. Peter's got like a great eye for design, and you know, he developed the look of both Count Draco Knucklebuster and Starkiller. So he's absolutely like one of the funnest guys to work with. He's got like a great mind and very creative. So we're just going to keep making like kick-ass books and toys and stuff like that. Awesome. And then James launches, I think in a month, his new company, which is called, it's a card. It's a collectible card that also comes with a comic book on it. It's called Comics Tags. So that will be coming out. It's like another branch of Scout coming out next month.
That's pretty awesome. It's a lot of stuff going on. You got a lot of stuff on your plate, which is pretty cool. Keeping yourself busy, huh?
Yeah, what else am I going to do? Exactly. You know, it's not like I can go hang out with anybody. So
yeah, exactly. It's crazy. We talked about my wife and I don't actually, we talked about going out like for dinner. And I was like, my wife and I were talking about how like we would go out every 3 weeks or so. And so like the pandemic sucked because you couldn't hang out with anybody. But in the same sense, when it was like me going out to restaurants wasn't crazy because I was like, I didn't do it that often enough that it was like, you know, worth it to me. And I was like, it's going to be weird now being like, okay, we should go out because we can, not because we want to, because we are allowed to now.
I'm telling you, you might as well just like embrace these last few months of you know, the lockdown, because when it's over, it's over. Everybody's going to go crazy.
I'm excited for it. I mean, I'm looking forward to it. I think the first big thing that's going to happen for me is going to be a Comic-Con, Bangor Comic and Toy-Con in October. I'm having a child, like I mentioned before, the summer, so probably going to be a little bit focused on that. But I think the biggest thing I'm going to do is going to, the Bangor Comic and Toy-Con. It's going to be at the Bangor Mall, which I'm excited about that. So hopefully you'll be able to make it. We'll see. It's a little bit farther out now, but like, you know, and hopefully it still happens. Not putting anything down on the actual schedule yet until
I'm thoroughly thinking it is happening.
Yeah.
I have full intention to be there. Black Caravan will have its own booth there. That's me awesome. And Rich will both be in attendance, and we're going to try and get some of our creators to come out too.
Be cool. I'm excited because it'd be cool to, you know, meet. And if you're in the Bangor area, it'd be cool for that. If not, check out the social media we mentioned before. I'll be on the links too. So you can check him out and follow Joe and see what he's doing. I really appreciate you coming on, man. Is there anything else you wanted to throw out there before we end this thing, or are you good?
No, just buy Black Caravan Comics. That's it. Buy them all.
I'm going to start doing it now. Like I said, I got my little itch with a couple of things. Now I got to get out there and get some more. I mean, you know, we can honestly,
Jerry Blackbird, that's coming out in days. That should grab it when you see it. Oh yeah. They come polybagged, like I said. So you got to get two, you got to open one and keep one mint. I don't know.
Exactly. No, you got to get two. You got to do that. And in my comic book shop, I get all my comic books in a little black plastic bag. It looks like I'm buying porn anyway. So it's fine if it's polybagged because an adult book anyway, right? So thanks a lot, man. I really appreciate you coming on and talking with me.
Yep. Take care, man.